I want to put a tag on this text, and for a moment with your prayers, I'm going to say, I want to know what love is. As I've said before, I get annoyed with how the Revised Common Lectionary chops up the Bible. Our second reading from 1 John begins in the middle of a thought. So let me read to you verses 11 through 15, this time from the Message translation. For this is the original message we heard. We should love each other. We must not be like Cain, who joined the evil one and then killed his brother. And why did he kill him? Because he was deep in the practice of evil, while the acts of his brother were righteous. So don't be surprised, friends, when the world hates you. This has been going on for a long time. The way we know we've been transferred from death to life is that we love our brothers and sisters. Anyone who doesn't love is as good as dead. Anyone who hates a brother or sister is a murderer, and you know very well that eternal life and murder don't go together. Every now and then, I wonder if someone is spiritually alive or spiritually dead. You're either one or the other. Jesus described it as crossing from death to life. Think of it this way. As you drive from Illinois to Dubuque, Iowa, at a definite point on the bridge over the Mississippi River, you cross over from one state to the other. There's no in between. You cross over from Illinois to Iowa. It's the same with someone being virtually spiritually alive or spiritually dead. It's one or the other. I've wondered occasionally if someone is a spiritually alive or spiritually dead, and I used to think it would be helpful if there was a way to check their spiritual pulse and say, yep, this one's spiritually alive, or nope, this one is spiritually dead. I realized eventually that there is a spiritual pulse check. 1 John 3:14 says, the way we know we've been transferred from death to life is that we love our brothers and sisters. In other words, if you don't love others, there's no spiritual pulse. Just as surely as you can check your wrist and say, yep, it's still beating, you can apply one question today that indicates if you're spiritually alive or spiritually dead. Do you love others? John really likes the subject of love. He uses the word love 33 times in this short letter. The Bible really dwells on this command to love one another. In fact, that very thought happens 15 times in the New Testament, six of them here in 1 John. Listen again to 1 John 3:11. For this is the original message we heard. We should love each other. If this was just some sound advice, we could look at it differently. If this was just about a wise way to have a better life or to make a better world, we could put it in a category like that. But the Bible isn't just a book of good advice about how to make life better. This book is first about God fixing our broken relationship with the Creator. So when John talks about his command to love one another, he pulls no punches. This is a life or death issue. On one side of this issue is hate. Don't be surprised, friends, when the world hates you. When the world hates us. I thought we were likable people. I kind of like us, especially me. Jesus said it would be this way. He was speaking to his disciples a few hours before his arrest and crucifixion, preparing them for what was coming down the road. It wasn't just to get them through his death and the few days afterward until he arose. He was looking farther ahead when he said, if the world hates you, keep in mind that it hates me, hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Remember what I told you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. That's the world's side of things. Right away, it ought to say something to anyone who claims to be a follower of Jesus Christ. If the way you're living can't be distinguished from the way non-Christians live, if there's no difference between you and anyone who doesn't claim to be a follower of Christ, you need to do some honest self-study and ask why not. If you live around people whose deeds are evil, if you live a noticeably distinct life in a world where other people have no problem doing what's wrong, don't be surprised if the world hates you. Remember the story of Cain. Cain hated his brother and murdered him because Cain's deeds were evil and Abel's were righteous. Don't be surprised when the world hates you. That has the possibility of creating for us a potentially dangerous situation. When we do live righteously and the people around us hate us for it, it causes temptation for us. Either we'll be tempted to compromise so they'll ease up, or we'll be tempted to hate them back. Do not be surprised, friends, when the world hates you. But we have an alternative when it comes to the world hating us. Paul put it this way in Romans 12:21. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good. As followers of Jesus, we're different this way. We're on the other side of this issue, the opposite of hate. You can tell if you're passed out of death into life by checking your pulse and asking yourself the simple question, do you love others? Okay, Daryl, I hear you, but how do I love? What does that look like? Well, I'm so glad you asked. What you are saying is, I want to know what love is. Foreigner released a song with that name back in 1984, and it became their first number one song. Mick Jones, who wrote the song at 3 a.m, said about writing it, I don't know where it came from. I consider it a gift that was sent through me. I think there was something bigger than me behind it. I'd say it was probably written entirely by a higher force. Well, okay, Mick. Let's hear from a higher force what love is. I wish I could sing this song, but I wouldn't do it justice if I tried to sing it, so I'm going to play it instead. Just a piece of it, not the whole thing. If you grew up in the 80s, there's a good chance that was your favorite power ballad. When I was DJing parties in college, I had to play it 2 or 3 times a night. I loved it back then. I still love the song, but in a different way now. You know, seeing it performed live when I was working lights for one of their concerts, and yes, I got to work lights for one of their concerts in college, was a highlight. And wherever they traveled and did it in concert, they would get a gospel choir from the community to come and perform the song with them. So you got this gospel choir behind them singing along and stuff. It was a powerful performance. these days, however, doesn't do quite the same thing for me. When I hear it now, it sets to words what happens when anyone tries to understand love without God in the picture. It can't be done. Even at our very best, we take something that's wonderful and make a mess out of it. That song is considered a power ballad. 1 John 3:16 is a power verse. It's easy to memorize. It's in simple words. It's full of valuable, applicable truths for life. It's about a singularly powerful, all-important subject. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. We can point at all kinds of things that show a great picture of love. I don't want to discredit those. I challenge you to find one that even begins to approach the picture of God, emptying God's self by taking on human flesh and then literally laying down his life on a cross to save the very people who were hating and killing him. If you want to know what love is, if you want me to show you, if you want to feel what love is, I'll point you to Jesus Christ. Every other description of love in the Bible is summed up in the cross of Jesus. Love causes you to lay down your life for your friend. It is patient, kind, not envious, not boastful, humble, seeking the good of others, slow to become angry, lets go when it's wronged, wants what's good, always protects, trusts, hopes, and perseveres. If that sounds big and overwhelming to you, good. You're starting to actually understand what true love is. Paul puts it this way in Ephesians. I pray that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant that you may be strengthened in your inner being with power through his Spirit, and that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, as you being rooted and grounded in love. I pray that you may have the power to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, so that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. This struggle is lived out in our lives each day as you wonder what to do in certain situations. Your friend has food stuck between his teeth. Might embarrass him to point it out. On the other hand, you don't want your friend to spend the day with this big green thing in his teeth. Total stranger is clearly on something. Drunk, high, you don't know. She's staggering around, standing on a railroad track as an express train approaches. She might resist you trying to push her off the track or accuse you of attacking her. A man is standing on the street corner holding a sign. He's asking for money, but he doesn't look too starved. He also doesn't look very trustworthy. Your son tests positive for drugs. Again, he doesn't care to live by your rules. But he doesn't have anywhere else to live. Stupid punks want to get at a rival gang member, so they fire over 50 shots at his car, barely hitting him, but putting 6 bullets into his 7-year-old daughter. You hear word on the street about who did it. You want to tell the police, but the killers may come after you if they do. 30-year-old man starts attacking a 14-year-old girl and her mother in the grocery store. All because he believes the girl was cutting in line. You could try to break up the fight, but then this isn't your fight, and there's always the chance he could turn on you if you do intervene. Those are hard decisions. Once we decide we want to live on the side of loving, there are still some things to figure out. We need to love the right way. John helps us with that here too. This is why we ought to live sacrificially for our fellow believers and not just be out for ourselves. If you see some brother or sister in need and have the means to do something about it, but turn a cold shoulder and do nothing, what happens to God's love? It disappears, and you made it disappear. My dear children, let's not just talk about love. Let's practice real love. Church, love is going to look like laying down our lives. Jesus laid down his life for us, and we need to be ready to lay down our lives for others. The church has been showing us what it looks like ever since the disciples got over their fears and started proclaiming the gospel. Tertullian was a theologian and author who lived in the second and third century. Among the things he wrote is a description of the difference between followers of Jesus and the people around them. He wrote, "Look, they say, how Christians love one another, for they themselves hate one another. And how they are ready to die for each other, for they themselves are readier to kill each other." Tertullian could write this because he saw that when sick or unwanted children were abandoned on the streets, it was most often Christian people who took them in and cared for them. Christians demonstrated what it means to lay down your life while non-believers ran from it. Another way they did this was by coming to the aid of others during plagues in the early centuries. One plague believed today to have been smallpox raged in the Roman Empire from 250 to 280 AD. I think I've shared this before, but it's worth sharing again. At its height, the epidemic is estimated to have killed 5,000 people a day in the city of Rome alone. Dionysius of Alexandria, in a first-hand account, describes how Christians laid down their lives. Heedless of danger, they took charge of the sick, attending to their every need and ministering to them in Christ. And with them departed this life serenely happy, for they were infected by others with the disease, drawing on themselves the sickness of their neighbors and cheerfully accepting their pains. In communities where there was a strong Christian presence caring for the sick, generally the number of people who died was about 2/3 lower than those without. Throughout the century, it has been the Christian community that has established hospitals and orphanages to care for those that the world abandoned. We live on this side of some great examples of what laying down your life may look like. It may look a lot simpler. Whether it's simple or we're called or on to make the ultimate sacrifice, it's not something just for super saints. It's what followers of Jesus do. All right, real quickly, when it comes to us showing it, let's take what John says here at verse 18 to send us in the right direction. Let's not just talk about love. Let's practice real love. Church, love involves two things. I'm going to share them with you and share two challenges, then I'll be done. First, love involves action. Talk is cheap. Apparently, that has always been true. So we're going to have to do more than just speak about showing love. If we have come to some better understanding of what love is, then we all need to make some specific plan of action to put it into practice. You can't look at someone in need and close up your heart toward them if you're able to help. Love will involve action, which brings me to challenge number one. And that is for you to decide what action you are going to take this week that will show you what love, that will show you know what love is. What action are you going to take this week to show that you know what love is? Second, love involves truth. Love should be well informed. Okay, somebody told me this was a true story. I don't know if it is or not, but I'm going to tell it anyway. A young mother loved her little baby boy, but he had stomach trouble for weeks and was losing weight. That's hard on a baby that's not 2 years old. The doctor told her to take the little guy off of all dairy products. No cheese, no milk. Maybe that was the problem. But her little boy continued to be sick. She took him back into the doctor. She told him, "You said to take him off of dairy stuff." So I did. I've mostly just been feeding him yogurt. Take a moment with that one. Now, that lady loved her baby boy, but she needed truth along with that love. In this case, the truth that yogurt is a dairy product. Once she got him off the yogurt, he got better. So many times, the loving thing to do isn't going to be a simple answer. We need truth to direct our actions on this. I don't trust my own judgment when I'm called to somehow lay down my life. I need the one who has all wisdom and who has spelled it out for us to see. But this truth I do know. Whenever I get confused, whenever I doubt, whenever I lose motivation, this is how I know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for me. Which brings me to challenge number two. Every day this week, before you even get out of bed, recite that verse. It's easy to memorize. It's also a verse that's perfect for personalizing. So every morning, recite this verse. This is how I know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for me. That's 1 John 3:18. But we're going to practice this right now to make sure you've got it. So repeat after me. Don't look at your bulletin. Just repeat after me. This is how I know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for me. All right, pretty good. Now let's do it again. And y'all at home, y'all better be doing this also. All right, ready? This is how I know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for me. All right. One last time, but let's say it all together this time. So we're not repeating after me. We're going to say it all together. All right. So 1, 2, 3. This is how I know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for me. Amen.